You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Now, they have been around for 200 million years and have even outlasted dinosaurs. What am I talking about? Sturgeon. They're probably the most valuable of all fish, as they are harvested for caviar, that luxury food that some like to tuck into on a Friday evening. Do you? I don't. I've never even tasted it. But many species of sturgeon around the world are vulnerable to extinction. The fish is classed as critically endangered on the International Union for the Conservation of Nature's Red List of Threatened Species. Being on the red list means the sturgeon is one step away from being extinct in the wild. So it's very serious. And just to demonstrate how bad things are, in China, for the first time since records began, there was no natural reproduction of wild Chinese sturgeon on the Yangtze River last year. The picture isn't so great in Europe either. The Danube River Basin preserves some of the most important sturgeon populations in the world today, with Romania and Bulgaria holding the only remaining viable populations of wild sturgeons within the European Union. Jutta Jarl works for the Worldwide Fund for Nature in Austria. She's project manager of the Saving Danube Sturgeons Project. Jutta joins us now from the studio in Vienna. Jutta, good afternoon to you. Will you tell me exactly what you do for the Worldwide Fund for Nature?
For the Worldwide Fund for Nature, or WWF as maybe it's better known, the sturgeons are one of the global priorities, just as the pandas or the tigers. And although they might not be as cute for some people, they really need our total efforts to be saved from extinction. Mm-hmm. And this is my job mainly in the Danube area.
So there are sturgeon in the Danube?
Yes, fortunately they are still there. And actually the Danube is one of the few rivers where they are still left. Within the European Union, actually, the only viable populations are still surviving there. And this is therefore the focus of our attention.
Can you describe what a sturgeon looks like, please?
Yes. Sturgeons are very special fish. Usually when I say to people that I'm working on sturgeons, I get blank faces. And then I say, caviar? That's where you get caviar from? Then it's, these. But there is much more than caviar to say about sturgeons, because they are living fossils. So this is something really extraordinary. They originated from more than 200 million years ago. So they actually survived the dinosaurs and stayed nearly unchanged in the way they look. And this is also very, I find them actually very special and cute by their own way. They have a very funny muscle, so a pointed snout with barbels, very sensitive. And they have not scales like a carp, for example, but they have these bony scutes, these blades along their body, five rows of them, and they are very sharp edged. And this is actually their protection from most of their enemies. It just doesn't work for us humans. But yeah. When you see a sturgeon, it looks totally different from any other fish.
Are they big? Are they as big as tuna?
They are even bigger. So this is also something that's so special about them. They get really, really huge. The biggest one reported was more than 7 meters long. So just imagine a fish the size of, a small bus and a weight of 1.5 tons. Really incredible for just one fish to grow that big.
And they're all freshwater fish, Jutta, are they?
Well, it's more difficult with them. There are a few that are only purely freshwater forms or freshwater species, but most of them spend their life in the sea. And then, just to reproduce, they have to go upstream the rivers to spawn there. And they are really migrating very long distances. For example, in the Danube, they come up from the Black Sea more than 2,000 kilometers. So, for example, here in Vienna, where I'm today, there used to be sturgeons. They were caught here and sold on the fish market. So it's really, really also one of the fascinating things about sturgeons.
Jutta, fit them into the galaxy of fish for us. Generally, we divide fish into the cartilaginous ones, those, and the bony ones, those that are made mainly of cartilage, the stuff we have in our noses and ears and things like that. And
yes,
those bony fish. Now, this fellow is very ancient. Where does he derive from? Does he come from the shark group? He has a tail like a shark, after all. Or is he from the bony group?
It looks a bit like a shark, you're right, especially the tail. And it's some people mix it up a little bit. And it also has the same structure, so this cartilaginous structure. But this is secondary, so they are not directly related to sharks, but have similarities.
And you have to, just to look a little bit maybe at the status of the sturgeon now, because the sturgeon at this stage has been designated for quite a long number of years as endangered. A big range of different species of sturgeon have been designated as endangered. And indeed on the programme quite a number of years ago now, we discussed this. And looking at the material in advance of today's programme, I'm not sure we have made great progress in terms of trying to protect the sturgeon. What's your own view and your organisation's view in terms of the status of the sturgeon now? Are we doing enough, or what more can we do to try and protect them?
Yeah, the status of the sturgeons is really very dramatic. And for some of the species, it might be very late at least. And it's really urgent to set all measures we can to protect them. But there are fortunately also positive examples, especially in Northern America, where the decrease of the populations started much earlier than in Europe and in Asia. So they could already start protection measures 100 years before us, and we can already see the success of that. So this is our light on the horizon, also for the sturgeons here.
So we're thinking then of this fish that lives in the sea and then comes in up the freshwater rivers to lay eggs, and it is at this stage in its life cycle that humans want it, because at that point they catch the fish in the rivers to remove the eggs, which are eaten as caviar before any kind of spawning takes place. So presumably then they're endangered, not so much in the oceans where they spend a lot of their life, but at this stage of their lives when they come up the freshwater rivers.
Yeah, this makes them also so vulnerable to overfishing. They have to go up the rivers, which means they have to pass the mouths, the deltas of the river. And then this is where most of the big fishing villages historically used to grow and living on fishing sturgeons. And this is where, unfortunately, also now the poaching is still going on. But there's also poaching in the Black Sea, for example. So actually sturgeons are so valuable that they are caught wherever they can get hold of them. But you're right, in the river, the danger is the most, especially on the lower areas of the river.
And the other problem, I think, Jutta, is the fact that these fish are very slow to mature. And that obviously is a big issue, in the sense that if your fish is taking a long time to actually get to the stage where they're reproducing, it's very easy then to overexploit them and to damage them.
Yes, the good thing about sturgeons is they can grow very old, so they have a very long lifespan. For a fish, I really find it incredible that they can reach more than 100 years. But they mature like we do. So the beluga sturgeons, for example, the biggest ones, the females need 15 to 20, even 25 years to spawn for the first time. So it's a long time for the fish to grow. And they also do not reproduce every year, especially these big sturgeon species. They only swim up the river every maybe 4 or 5 years to reproduce. So their reproduction success is very limited, or it's very easy then when you catch one of those to really have a very negative impact on the population already.
Presumably, Jutta, the fact that they take so long to mature militates against them being a successful farmed species. I mean, most of the caviar we buy should come from fish farms, not from the wild. But presumably the very long delay in getting the fish mature makes it very expensive to produce caviar. Is there any way this could be speeded up? And presumably the fish is killed each time to get the eggs out of her. So is there any way we could modify that so that a fish could deliver eggs year after year or every so often? Is there any possibility in that direction?
The aquaculture of sturgeon to produce caviar in farms is really exploding. So it has grown from year to year. At the moment, for example, 97% of the caviar that is traded comes from farms. So there's very, very little trade in caviar from wild sturgeons, also because they are protected in most areas. And this aquaculture, it took a long time to take off, because the sturgeons take so long, of course, to reach maturity. And there have been attempts, for example, to produce hybrids that reproduce earlier, so that have shorter time period to become mature. But, for example, beluga caviar is the luxury food. So belugas take longest among the sturgeons to become mature. And for a farm, they are only right now, or during the last years, they have started to harvest caviar from beluga females. And also the problem is the females produce more caviar the older they get. So usually they are not harvested when they could spawn the first time, but the aquaculture facilities try to wait a little bit and take the caviar when it's the second or third period. And this means they have to put a lot of money and spend it on the fish and feed it and take care of it. And then they have only once a benefit from this fish, because usually sturgeons are killed to get the caviar out, yes.
Can they not harvest it out of the fish? I mean, after all, the fish spawn and the eggs come out of the fish when it's actually spawning. Mm. Can they not do that and harvest it and use it rather than having to kill the fish?
That would be really good. And there is one institute in Germany trying to find a method. The problem is the gourmets, they want their caviar, of course, to pop on their gums. And this is what makes it so special. But when the eggs are really ripe, so when the fish would spawn, then the shell of the egg is too soft. So it would be a smeary mass more than this caviar with its fine grains. So therefore the fish is killed.
The product that's produced in the farms, is that clearly labelled in the supermarkets? So if you were going along a supermarket shelf, could you clearly separate out what might be the small amount that would be coming from the wild from the sustainable product from the farms?
The good thing about caviar is that there is a clear system in place, so consumers can identify which caviar is legal and comes from farms. This is CITES. CITES is the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. All sturgeon species are listed by CITES, so this means the international trade in them and in their products is very clearly regulated. And this means for caviar that every tin, every glass of caviar needs to have this special CITES label on it. And this has a code showing exactly which species of sturgeon, for example, produced this caviar, if it was captive bred or wild caught, from which country it comes, the year it was harvested. And with this code, you can really follow the whole trade chain back to where the sturgeon was bred and the caviar was harvested.
Jutta, the Americans have a very good reputation protecting their sturgeon. They're much better at it than we are. What are they doing that we're not doing?
The Americans are 100 years ahead of us, so they have started to protect sturgeons, for example, to have fishing bans 100 years before. So they also took a long time to find out what really helps the sturgeons, but yes, at the moment, fortunately, they are successful and they are having the only sturgeons stocks that are really doing well and recovering.
But it isn't just the overfishing that causes the problem. Sturgeon have to come up river to spawn. And if there are dams and if there are weirs and if there are electricity things happening on the river, this blocks their passage. So the more development there are on these big rivers, the shorter the route there is available for the fish. So this must be having a huge impact as well.
Sturgeons really face many problems and many threats. So apart from this overfishing and the illegal caviar trade, there is this problem of habitat loss and habitat fragmentation. So they have very special places where they used to spawn, where they overwinter, where they the young sturgeons grow and where they find food. And one thing is, we know very little of this, so we only know a few of these places. And the problem is, of course, if they can no longer reach their spawning sites because, for example, a dam or some other structure is blocking their way, then they are really sometimes even turning back and cannot spawn anymore. So the pressure that is more and more on the rivers is really a big issue for the sturgeons.
I think there's probably one bright light, Jutta, on the horizon, and that's the European Water Framework Directive. I work a good deal on salmon, and I'm very encouraged by what I see in relation to the Danube salmon, the Huchen, and the efforts that have been made now to reconnect sections of the Danube, particularly the sections in Austria, with the main channel. So the efforts that are going on at the moment in terms of improving connectivity in the Danube, it must give you heart in terms of improving the access and the potential habitat for the sturgeon.
There is a lot going on to connect rivers again and to make dams passable for fishes. The problem is with sturgeons, they, for example, cannot jump like trouts do or salmons. They really move on the bottom of the river. They need a very strong current so that they are encouraged to follow this way. And the biggest problem in the Danube is the huge iron gate dams. So these are the ones that are giving us really a headache. They block the Danube from the Black Sea upstream after about 860 kilometers, and they are totally unpassable. The very difficult thing there is that they are very high, so it's about nearly 40 meters high, and they are in a kind of gorge, so it's very hard to find a way across them. But at the moment, there are feasibility studies going on to see if there are any possibilities. I mean, there are crazy things that are working for some fish, for example, fish lifts and other forms of getting fishes over barriers. So all of these are now thought through. And I hope then experts come up with a solution, and then there will be money to really build the thing.
Well, there's an even crazier suggestion now, Jutta, and that's the suggestion of the fish cannon. And it was about 4 weeks ago, it was announced that the trials on this fish cannon have been hugely successful. And basically what happens is the fish in a large column of water are actually transported via the cannon up over very high dams and then released back out upstream of the dam. And I'm interested to know whether or not it works in reverse for the juveniles as well.
What do you mean by a cannon? Are they shot?
They're basically shot in this big column of water. Now, the biggest issue at the moment is the impact of the fish hitting the water. And they're researching that, but they think they're overcoming that as well.
So they shoot a large mass of water in which there are fish in a big sort of bang, and this huge body of water containing fish zooms up in the air and plops into the river higher up.
Over any impassable barrier. And it comes from the aquaculture industry, where for many years people have been removing fish from cages with these massive great tubes by sucking the fish into the cages. And it works very well in terms of stocking the cages with smolts and bringing the adults out for harvest. So the idea now is that the fish would be trapped, if you like, in a volume of water. And then the cannon itself then would force the water out at the other end of the tube. It's a crazy idea, but I'm quite fascinated by it.
And presumably there's a big propeller or something driving this, is there?
I would imagine that it's probably to do with suction, but how that vacuum, if you like, is formed, I don't know.
But the sturgeon is such a huge fish, I mean over 1,000 kilograms in some instances. It'd be some cannon to wallop, and a wallop of the poor thing landing on the water.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't be any good for it, surely.
Well, I mean, that's why, as I say, I think in terms of the other problem, obviously, is getting the juveniles back down over these dams. That's very often in the salmon world a much more serious problem. What do you think, Jutta? Do you think this would have any potential at all in terms of juveniles or adults?
I'm sure it will be considered. Even the crazy sounding ideas. I mean, if they work, why not? Of course, a question is always how the costs are, but it sounds like more feasible actually than building a huge bypass.
Jutta, another madcap idea. We have sturgeon from time to time. They're caught off the Irish coast and in Irish estuaries. If we went back far enough, would we find sturgeon in Irish rivers? And if that's true, is there any possibility we could reintroduce sturgeon?
I think that there was one species native to Ireland, the Acipensa sturio, a species that is very, very rare at the moment. So globally, it only survived in a very limited river system in France. But I think it was also found in the Shannon in Ireland, and I think quite long ago, so there were more records in the 17th century. But it's definitely worth looking into it and enabling the surgeons to get back there.
Well, there was a famous case in Dingle, a story for you, Jutta, to tell other people coming from Ireland. There was a sturgeon caught in Dingle, which is a port in the southwest, back in the 1960s. It was caught by a trawler. Now, the rule here in Britain and in Ireland is that the the fish must go to the head of state. And if you're in England, it must go to the Queen. So this fish had to be sent, was to be sent to Eamon de Valera, our president, according to the law. Now, unfortunately, the man who owned the boat was a fierce Republican, very Republican, and he didn't like our president de Valera, and he didn't want to send the sturgeon to Eamon de Valera. So he sold it to the British, the London fish market, whereupon it promptly ended up in Buckingham Palace.
And it went to the Queen, which was much worse for a Republican than sending it to Dev.
He took the Queen's shilling, quite literally. Anyway, Jutta, thank you very much indeed. Lovely to talk to you and listen to you.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks a lot. I also learned a lot.
Great. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Know that about the sturgeon and Eamon de Valera, Richard?
Well, that's a very interesting. It was on a documentary on One. The name of the man who produced
on RTE Radio
it,
One.
RTE Radio
the
One.
The documentary
I think,
one. Good.
Yes, and the story, the complete story, is rather more entertaining. The sturgeon was caught out at sea and brought in. They knew what it was. They kept it alive on the deck of the boat. And the fellow who was supposed to offload the sturgeon shouted down, "Throw it out." Meaning that the fellow on the deck should throw the sturgeon up onto the quay. Instead, he threw the valuable sturgeon worth hundreds of pounds back into the sea. The guy on the boat thought that's what he was being asked to do. So the sturgeon had escaped and there was blue murder. But then very shortly afterwards, another sturgeon was caught, which some people say was the same animal. Others say was a different one. And that is the one that ended up in Buckingham Palace because the skipper didn't like De Valera, having been imprisoned himself, apparently, as a Republican.
But did he eat? Would he eat this fish flesh, or is it just the caviar that they eat? Or do they eat the flesh?
Well, Ken can tell us after news headlines with Ray Kennedy. Ken, here's one you might appreciate from one of our listeners. Both sturgeon and salmon thought the referendum was over. The two key names on the yes side in the referendum.
And can you eat sturgeon?
Yeah, well, can you? Has Greg got time? Can we answer this one, Greg?
You can.
Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
Yes, you can eat. You can eat sturgeon flesh, all right. And people do indeed eat it.
And what does it taste like? Chicken.
I have no idea. I suppose
oh,
it is.
Never tasted
chicken
it?
Of the sea. No. I'm sure it's quite exclusive because given how pricey the eggs are. But certainly the marine fish, I'm sure, tastes very well. You know.
All right, Greg Allen has an update on sport.
Sorry, I just remember seeing a sturgeon once in the Natural History Museum. I don't think I'd ever want to eat one.
No, they're not the prettiest fish in the
Ooh,
world.
Getting the skin off, Greg, is the big problem.
Is
big,
it? Why?
Big oh, absolutely, because they have these big bony scutar shields on, the big bony shields. So that'd be quite an operation, I think.
There you are now, sturdy name, sturdy fish.